Before we get started with this week's edition of the always pressing PGA DFS podcast, let me let you know that it's brought to you by Draft.com. Fantasy sports fans, listen up. Did you know that your chances of winning on Draft are 80% better than on salary cap sites? That's why you need to try Draft. No more getting crushed by the pros. More than 1 million people have already downloaded Draft. Play in a real-life NBA, NFL, or for this podcast purpose, PGA Draft right now. Be done drafting in under 5 minutes and get paid out the day the tournament is done. The PGA version is great. You draft, you enjoy the 4 days, and you collect your money Sunday night. Drafts are filling every second, so you can join them whenever you want. All new players, this is the catch, all new players, when they make their first deposit, get entry into a real money draft by using the promo code SDSports. You got to use the promo code SDSports to get that free entry. That's right, playing a real money draft for free by using the promo code SDSports. But it gets even better. For some crazy reason you do not like Draft, they are offering a $100 money back guarantee. Just search Draft in your app store or go to draft.com and come play for free right now, but you have to use the promo code SDSports. Void or prohibited, must be 18 or older. See website for details. Offer must be redeemed within 14 days. Now, welcome to this week's edition of the always pressing PGA DFS podcast.
Play. Sir. Yeah. Yeah.
Kane is in the building.
Yeah. Alright, already the show goes on all night. Till the morning we dream so long. Anybody ever wonder when they will see the thunder? Just remember when it comes up, the show goes on.
And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the Always Pressing PGA DFS podcast. This week, recapping the Open Championship and giving you a DraftKings preview of the RBC Canadian Open. In order to do so, I'm going to be joined by my co-host, as always, Jesse. How we doing, man?
Doing good. Another golf hangover, Bubba.
Yes. Yes. Always hungover from a big major weekend. That's what we do here at the Always Pressing Pod. But you have a golf hangover from actually playing golf. How'd that go?
Yeah. So, funny story, you know, obviously I live in Kentucky. You guys, probably everybody heard about the Barbasol and how terrible the weather was there all week long. Well, I live about an hour from the Barbasol and played golf about 45 minutes north of here. So like an hour and a half, 2 hours from the Barbasol. Anyway, the same conditions they had there, we played in yesterday. And it was worse than the Open. Like we had 70 degrees and it rained the whole time. And they had 80 degrees and just windy. So, yeah, but I ended up winning my flight, so it worked out.
Worked out perfect. That, you bring that up, and I'm curious because where I live out here in California, about an hour or so south of Monterey, every afternoon at about 1:30, 2 o'clock, we get north winds. And it, like, when I play in the afternoon, it can be anywhere from like 10 to 30 mile an hour winds. It depends on the day. It's crazy. So would you rather play in windy conditions like they played in Europe or the rain?
Oh, wind all day, every day. Cause you can deal with the wind. I mean, that even if it's kicking up 30 mile an hour, you know, I mean, it's not fun by any means, but you're not wet. Like there is literally everything I owned was soaking wet after this round yesterday, because it was just a straight, like just a rain, like for about 90% of what we played. And they finally had to stop play cause of water on the greens. And we got to finish up with just a mist in our face for about the last four holes. But yeah, I wind all day, every day, man. What about gotcha. You?
Yeah, I guess I'm just used to it because, yeah, the rain, it gets, you know, slippery. And this, I played in a nice course this winter, and it was raining. It was the only time we could get on, and we couldn't reschedule because it's so busy.
Right.
And it was, like, it was nasty. Like, you made it work, but your ball plugs everywhere. You get no roll. I'm already not that long of a hitter to begin with. So the wind kind of actually makes it a more even playing field for a guy like me. Like they have to come back to my world because we'll get into it. But one of my favorite golfers that happened to win over the weekend, he plays more my kind of game where we don't have to bomb and gouge the course. We play with our brain. So that's how it works.
Yeah. Yeah.
The wind, like you said, you can play the wind. The rain, there's a lot of factors.
You're not worried about the club slipping out of your hand. You're not worried about raindrop hitting you in the face. And, you know, I mean, I wear glasses too. For those of you who watch the YouTube, you know that, but the rest of you may not. I wear glasses and I wear sunglasses when I play golf, and it's not easy, and they're prescription. That's why I wear them. You know, I'm not wearing them just because to try to look cool. Like I need to see, you know. So yeah. It's just a bunch of BS, man. But you know, I won, so it's really all that matters, I guess.
All that matters. Well, let's talk about some open recap. It was amazing golf. I've said it many times on this show that it's my favorite major. Like I wasn't going to say that one yet, Jesse. That's coming. But it's my favorite major out of all of them. And I know some will argue with me that, you know, some like the Masters and everything. And I get it. But to me, what took place this weekend was what made golf great. There was like 8 guys that were within a shot or tied for the lead towards the end. It wasn't. And I know we always say the weather has a lot to do with how the Open plays, and we've said that about the U.S. Open in the last couple of years. But that course, the way it played, you know, the tougher holes into the wind, the easier holes you could birdie, but then guys tried to be aggressive and burn them, and it was just beautiful, beautiful golf, and I thoroughly enjoyed it. What were your overall thoughts before we talk about a few players?
Yeah, I mean, that course was, especially Thursday, it was like playing on concrete. I saw somebody tweet out, and I don't remember who, so forgive me, but they said that they forgot to adjust for strokes game playing on concrete. Because, I mean, the rollout that some of these guys were getting, the 100-yard rollout, you know, after hitting drives down the fairway, the greens were holding. No, I think the greens were very fair, and they didn't have them running very, you know, fast either. I think they were running out of 10, so not very fast for PGA Tour standards. But either way, the golf course, I mean, it's wild to look at a golf course that's totally burnt out like that, with just splotches of green. And I think it played a little bit easier because of that. I mean, the rough itself, like the deep rough, wasn't as thick. Like if you go back and watch John Vandeveld, you know, come up 18, if you watch that deal, which I highly recommend if you haven't seen it, it's very good documentary there by Golf Channel. But either way, that stuff he was hitting out was so thick you could barely advance it, and this stuff was more sparse, and it just lended to being able to hit it offline a little bit more, and it played a little bit easier. But overall, yeah, the golf course, I mean, like that's like a bucket list type of golf course. You know what I mean? Like, oh my gosh, if I could ever get over there and play that golf course, I think that would be like, you know, that would be top 5 easy of my list.
Oh yeah, I've already told the wife that like when we retire, I have like dreams of going to like baseball parks and everything. But golf wise, I told her we're gonna spend like a month over in that area, and we can go see your stuff if you want. But I'm gonna go play like 15 golf courses. Like yeah. That's just the way it's gonna go. I'm there. I'm gonna knock out a bunch of them. And you looked at that. I saw after the round yesterday, showed pictures of next year's course, and it looks amazing. Like just, yeah. I love links golf. I absolutely love it. That's some of my favorite courses to play is links style golf. The Thank You the Man's course. And I really, really enjoy links golf quite a bit. So it was fun. Let's talk some individual stuff here. And we're going to kick it off with the Open Championship, the golfer of the year. Francisco Molinari wins his third tournament of the year, like in the last 5 weeks. This guy's good, Jesse. He's really, really good. And you jumped on board, which made me so happy to see here. And I actually, Doc, who you know from the Sports Degens, He called me today and he says he had a future on Molly and he only played it because you finally agreed with me.
Yeah, well, I mean, you can't argue against what that guy has done over the last month and a half, or 2 months, or however long it's been. I mean, three wins now.
Three right? wins, one yeah, 1 Euro,
two top twos, and one other top 25 and 6 starts. I mean, that's just crazy golf. He figured out how to putt. I mean, he was always a great ball striker. And I used to play Molly long, you know, a couple of years ago or last year too, when he was, you know, mid price 7,000s and every week it's, you know, we'd be able to putt. And, you know, that's why, you know, I've got a little bit of resentment, but it's totally gone with Molly now. I mean, he's figured it out. He's totally redeemed himself. And, so yeah, I mean, it was a good time to jump on when you did.
Yeah, it's been fun because, like you said, he's always been a ball striker. So that's something that always catches my attention, especially on challenging situations where, you know, when the wind's a factor, when there's other things, which we saw, bombers did get in trouble if they weren't accurate. It burned them. And Molly, you just don't have to worry about that with. And once he figured out how to putt, it's just escalated even more. Because, like, I'm with you. I used to play him in those mid-sevens because, hey, he might not win, but he's going to get you, like, T25s. He's not gonna burn you. Well, now he's the 6th ranked golfer in the world at the moment.
Which is amazing. Which
I never thought I'd utter that. Like, I'm a big fan. I like to joke about it and everything. And I even told my wife, she's like, what are you so excited about? Well, look who won the tournament. She doesn't know who he is, but she has no idea who he is. But like, I pointed to a picture of him. I said, you see this guy? And she goes, he's a golfer. I said, that's my point. That's my point. Like, she knows like the Dustin Johnsons and all those guys you see on TV. And I'm like, yeah, this little guy over here. So that's why I love him. But what he did over the weekend was one of the more impressive things crazy. I've ever seen. Zero bogeys over the weekend. Zero.
Yes. 65, that's 69. That's nutty.
Yeah.
I mean, his last bogey was on 17 on Friday.
See, that's just so overlooked. And then you just mentioned 17, and I tweeted it when it happened, just kind of joking around like it was most of the day on Sunday. But his approach on the into 17 ended like the 20-mile-hour winds with the 2-iron. When it bounced off the ridge and rolled onto the green, that might have been the shot of the tournament, because that just locked in a par, which locked in the tournament basically for him. It was crazy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, he didn't even need that birdie on 18.
But then he
pipes one, and he's got a wedge in his hand going into the 18th. Of course, that was playing downwind. But either way, he was still hitting a wedge in there, knocked it to, what, 3, 4, 5 feet?
Yeah.
And made it. Made the 3 or 4 or 5 footer, which 1 year ago, Mully didn't do that shit.
No. Inside from 10 feet in, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but it felt automatic. Like, when I was watching it, especially yesterday, I was actually – in years past, I was on eggshells watching him play.
I was
just sitting back in my couch, not even caring. Like, oh, he's got a par. He's going to 2-putt for par at least. Like, I already knew. Like, I had no care in the world because he was just, like, so locked in. And he wasn't just like flirting on the rim of the hole. He was going right down the middle. Like, it was no question. So,
yeah, it was a ball striking performance for, you know, of all time, probably. If they had, and that's one gripe I have about this, and I'll talk about it here in just a minute, but they had shot tracker. Or shots gained data, which I'm sure they do behind the scenes, but they're not releasing to the public. But either way, he had to gain so many strokes to the green.
Yeah, I would love it. That's one thing I was angry about. And we talked about is we didn't have, like, on the app, we didn't have any shot track or any of that kind of stuff, which really sucked. But it happens. And you mentioned Molinari's shot on 18, which went inside the shot of another guy who wore red. And I can get inside. I can rant about how horrible that red shirt was. It is not the Tiger red I appreciate. But let's talk Tiger Woods, because I – continue to fade the man, because he basically did on Sunday what we were worried about the most. And he got out of his game plan. When he pulled the driver out, it just went downhill in a hurry. So what's your thoughts on Tiger's week as a whole, I guess, or kind of the implosion on Sunday afternoon?
Yeah, it was I didn't watch it. I just had guys, you know, everybody in the world texting me about the round going on and the guy I was playing with. You know, we were talking about how pissed off we were that we were missing Tiger leading in the open. But yeah, I did see some highlights, especially on 11 when he tried to play a miraculous flop shot to try to get up and down for par, instead of, I think, after he drilled somebody in the crowd and it went off their shin. And then he tries to hit a flop shot, lands it short, you know, takes a double, and that pretty much took him out of it. And that's those things that, like, I don't know, like, I guess he just still feels like he can hit every single shot, which I don't blame him. I mean, he is Tiger Woods, but sometimes you just got to take your medicine, and he hasn't learned that yet, I don't guess. I don't know. I mean, like, he played well, obviously. He shot 3 rounds of even par and 1 round of 5-under and finished 5-under for the tournament, so made a lot of birdies, made a lot of bogeys.
Yeah, he played really, really well. There's no hiding that. He's contending, which we've seen. He hasn't been able to close yet this year, which we've seen. That double bogey pretty much cost him everything. Obviously, it's Captain Hindsight stuff there. But it seemed like even the whole weekend, even most of Sunday, he's hitting irons off the tees, 3-woods, doing anything smart. And then he's like, okay, I'm a shot or two back. Now I got to put my foot on the gas. And it's like, why? You know how tough the course is playing. What are you doing, man? Like, literally parring out would have almost – You had a chance if you par out, basically.
Well, did you – are you talking about 11? Is that when he pulled driver? Is that what you're talking about?
I can't remember. It was 10 or 11. So I think
when the one – when he made double?
Is I thought the double – yeah, it might have been the same one. Yeah.
Because he birdied he birdied 11 every day except for on Sunday when he doubled it.
Yeah, but the thing is crazy. With Sunday, the conditions completely switched.
Right.
And that's where you got to kind of change your mindset. That's me, but he's a successful pro golfer, so what do I know?
Successful is an understatement.
Yeah, I can't even attempt to hit a driver the way he can. So whatever. Tiger, let me clarify, he didn't choke. He just did things he can't do yet.
He didn't choke. Yeah. He just he just had a fuck up. You know what I mean? Like, that's the best way to put it.
He had a mental mistake where he really thought he was still 26, and he's not.
Well, basically. I mean, he could probably hit that shot, but that shot he was trying to hit is a, you know, 1 in 10 shot. And I get it, you know, for him trying to go after it or whatever. Mm-hmm. But sometimes you just got to take your medicine, take your bogey, and then he bogeys the next. I mean, if he doesn't bogey double, if he doesn't go double, if he goes par there, he's in a playoff. So.
Exactly. Well, let's talk about a guy that did choke. His name's Jordan Spieth. And I thought we were going to be eating our words big time after Saturday when he drives the green on one, eagles it, so on and so forth. But then Sunday, Jordan showed up. Yeah. Jordan showed up in Jordan fashion. And when you talk about a guy unraveling under the pressure, I thought Jordan was kind of a calm, cool guy when he first started out, but it's not there anymore. Because literally when he's hitting his 3-wood out of the fescue where he should never have hit it, he's doing things he shouldn't do because the pressure got to him. It was ugly at times. What's your thoughts on Jordan's kind of collapse through the weekend?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't get to see much, but I mean, obviously birdie-free Sunday is really bad, 5 over. 76. This is all relatively speaking, of course, when I say really bad, it's relative to the feel or whatever, but 33 putts on Sunday too. I mean, yeah, it's just, I don't know. What was he doing? He didn't hit very many fairways. He had 40% of the fairways and 50% of the greens on Sunday and had 33 putts.
He was spraying it everywhere. He was trying to scramble his ass off and he just, he would do things that instead of, like you said, taking your medicine, he tried to go for too much and it just kept compiling on top of him.
Yeah. I mean, maybe he just wanted it too much. He had such a great round Saturday. I mean, 6 mm-hmm. under, bogey free. When he started off and he hit a 380 yard drive to like 10 feet and made the putt for eagle, you know, I was like, oh God, he's actually going to do this again. And he had a great round, but yeah, I mean, that's the hard part of golf with him and Tiger. They're obviously two of the greatest golfers in the world. Tiger's probably the greatest all time, if not, you know, in the top two. Jordan's very good golfer. He's won a bunch of majors already, still young, you know, still learning. I mean, golf is such a funny game because you can get out there and have it one day and literally forget how to swing the next day.
Yeah, no, and that's the funny part about it. It's a mental game against yourself and no one else. So
right, it's exactly right.
That's what I love about it, actually.
Yeah, but, me and both.
Yeah, and if people tuned in to listen to DraftKings, we will get there. But this is gonna be a long. It's gonna be a longer recap than normal because there's a lot of
stuff
to talk about.
It's a major.
Yeah, exactly. This is a lot to talk about, and I want to talk about a couple of guys. And he kind of had a quiet first three rounds, and then Sunday, Rory McIlroy came out when he made that eagle putt. And he starts fist pumping and he's jacked up. I thought it might have been just because he made a putt, but you know, he makes the eagle, which is huge. And it was so disappointing in Jesse because he did everything we talked about. If he could just putt like an average golfer, he wins that tournament by a couple strokes. Like he kicked ass from tee to green for the most part, especially on Sunday. And he comes up just short yet again. Was he two off the lead? And he played amazing golf. He just could not putt again. Someday he's going to go on a run. It's going to be terrifying.
Yeah. When he, like, yes, if he figured out how to putt, oh my God, like literally, I really think he could make a run at like being Tiger-esque.
He's almost as good at making these shots as Tiger is back in the day.
He hits his driver so long and straight. He's always been a good iron player. The putting is always his issue. I mean, he still shot every single round under par, shot 6 under for the tournament, finished in a tie for second. Very, very good tournament overall for him. I'm sure it's disappointing because I think he feels like he should win every time he steps on a golf course. And I don't blame him because he's that good. But he does need some putting lessons. His little double pirouette there on 14 after that eagle putt was
that's impressive.
Yeah, that was something else.
You know what? It reminded me of him and Captain America at the Ryder Cup trying to do celebrations over and over again, and you kind of run out of options, and that's what just happened.
Yeah.
I think he was that surprised he actually made a putt.
I'm with you. I agree with you. He putted really bad in the first round, and it kind of came back to a little bit of average. He putted pretty well on Saturday, but he made too many bogeys. So, yeah, I mean, dude, the thing about Rory is, and like, I'm gonna mention it. He just scores so many birdies and bogeys. So many birdies. He's hard to pass up. And once again, on DraftKings, he was less than 10% owned.
Yeah. Eventually, he's gonna win somebody a lot of money.
Well, I mean, he did already at the Arnold Palmer. Whoever had lost, lots of money beforehand on him. And then his ownership went up, and then now it's back down, and people just aren't on him at majors. It'll be interesting to see what happens to the PGA in a couple of weeks, because we tend to have a short memory in the DFS world, apparently.
Yes, very, very short. Who has a short memory of almost missing the cut but birdieing 18 is Justin Rose.
Oh, my God.
He sneaks in and gets 25% of America, or DraftKings players at least, happier as shit when he could have easily missed the cut. And then he proceeds to go 10 under over the weekend. His round on Sunday was a spectacle to see. Like, amazing golf from him. His shot on 18, or he almost holds out for a double eagle on 14, which would have made it even crazier. Like, he just made shot after shot. He looked like Justin Rose again, not the guy we saw the first 2 days. And he nearly wins it. He's now number two in the world behind Dustin Johnson. An amazing weekend from Justin. What's your thoughts on that? Because I know it was quite a roller coaster on Friday with Justin Rose.
Yeah, that birdie on 18, it probably cost me at least a couple $100s. Because I actually had a 6-6 lineup with Francisco Molinari that did not cash in the Millie Maker and did not cash in the 153 Max. And everybody else on the team was trash. I mean, they're all over par. But I think if Rose probably misses the cut, that team cashes in both, at least men. Anyways, enough about me. I was watching. I turned it on the Golf Channel this morning to watch the conclusion of Barbasol because they started at 10 o'clock. So I turned it on just a little bit early, because I was at work and just wanted to make sure I was had it on. And they had Sean Foley on there, who is Rose's coach, and he said that he thought that once Rose made that putt on 18, like a burden was just kind of lifted off of him. So like he put so much pressure on himself going into this tournament because it is his home tournament. It's the Open Championship. It's the thing he's heard about his whole entire life growing up. That's a reason why he hasn't played very well since his initial start as an amateur at the Open Championship. But he put so much pressure on himself, and he was just able to kind of lift that off and just go on a run. I mean, it's Saturday, 6-7 under was with zero bogeys is crazy, and then a really good 2 under round on Sunday in those conditions with an eagle and a birdie on the back coming in 32. He deserves his world ranking. He's played that good, especially over the last 6 months.
Yeah, he's been lights out good, crazy good. And I don't have the world rankings in front of us, but if you start to look at him now, and the prices according to the odds makers have changed also. The Ryder Cup's a lot closer than we once thought it was going to be a while back. U.S. is only minus 110 now. I think they're way up a while ago. So, and I think there's more Euros in the top 10 than Americans now. So it's going to be fun. a couple more kind of quick hitters here. Xander made a hell of a run, came up just short, but this guy, he has his rough weeks and then he has his great weeks showing the signs of a young golfer, but he looks like he's so close to breaking out. What do you think? Do you think we're going to keep seeing the roller coaster, or are we going to start seeing consistent Xander performances?
I don't know. I could never get him right. Literally every time I pick him, he's awful. When I don't pick him, he burns me. That's just how it goes with me at this point. I can't peg him, but he tends to just show up in like kind of the least, when you least expect it. But on the big stage. And so, yeah, I mean, he's a player, dude. I mean, he's legit. He bombs it off the tee. He's got a good short game. Just a couple bad shots on Sunday, killed him, especially that one on 17 when he blasted it right. I actually did see that shot, blasted it way right. And then he had a crying baby over there. And
that was ridiculous.
All kinds of weird things going on over there, which is odd to me that you have you're not just pushing that, taking that baby 200 yards away, but one way or the other, he had some distractions there. Whether or not that mattered, I don't know, but he didn't get up and down, and I don't know if they cost him or not, but he definitely was one shot behind before that, so he had a chance going at 18.
He had a roller coaster of a Sunday. He was spraying stuff. He'd have really good holes and really shaky holes, so he was all over the place, but great tournament overall, and he finished 6 under and tied for second, so nothing to complain about there. Let's talk about a couple missed cut guys. Obviously, Dustin Johnson. By the time I woke up on Friday, he had already missed the cut, so that was over. and then, Mr. I told you when we on our show last year, and you can probably write this down for next year's Open preview. I won't be playing Justin Thomas the first time he wins the British Open because he just looks so lost out there. It's the one tournament, as good of a player as he is, we talk about over and over, he gets to this tournament and he just looks lost. He's just gone. I don't know what it is. He doesn't have it. So what are your thoughts on those guys and maybe some others that missed the cut that, you know, Ian Poulter's complete trunk slam on Friday or something else? There's a lot of interesting missed cuts, of course.
Oh, just talk about the guys who burned me on DraftKings.
You and me both.
I didn't play any Justin Thomas, but yeah, he started out 4 under and then goes, that was through 11 and then goes 8 over the rest of the way. 77, he seemed like he had an okay weather draw. I don't know what to blame it on, but yeah, he's got a weird relationship, and Rahm is another one too with the Open Championship. I mean, he was in contention and he shoots 78. You know, I had him on a round three team or something, and sort of birdie bogey. He's like, okay, you know, no problem. Quit paying attention. Then he goes triple bogey double to finish out his front nine. She's 41 on the front. Like, he's just a complete mental midget, like you talk about quite often. DJ, man, basically two shots killed DJ. He hit him out of bounds on that par five.
That was so fucking frustrating.
Yes, you aren't kidding, man. And because he plays that cut and he just double crosses it, pulls it out of bounds. He made a par the first day. Where is he? Let me pull up his scorecard.
While you're doing that, yeah, because he goes OB and his next shot, he pipes it right down the middle. It's like, yeah, the second player is always the best player in the bag, but it's like, god damn, because he would have set up for eagle with a shot like that.
I mean, he would have made eagle had he just hit that drive the first time. Yeah. I mean, that's golf, but either way, so yeah, I mean, so that killed him, and then okay, so that hole. Two shots there, basically, or at least one shot we can say. He finished at 6 over. Cut was 4, so he was two shots out. And then 18, triple and a double, just to totally just cap it off. Because he made a little bit of a run there late in his round, early our time. We were all asleep, I'm sure, and was kind of coming back and then finished his bogey double. So, I mean, I don't know. You know, we'll talk about DJ this week because he's in play again. That's just DJ, man. Like, he hits does some shit like that from time to time. And Poulter, I don't know, 81.
That was impressive. if you're going to go bad, just go all out. And that's what Poulter did. Poulter literally just said, I think he probably started drinking on a turn. Like,
he may have.
He might have got a pepper, but it went the other way.
He may have still been drunk from like the night before or something. I don't know.
He doesn't have the Eddie Pepperell game where you show up hungover and it doesn't matter. But you heard about that yesterday, right?
Oh yeah, I saw his press conference. It's pretty cool.
I think the most frustrating thing about DJ is, like you said, he was at the plus three number through 16 on the second day, then the bogey double or double, yeah, bogey double to knock himself out of it. And Dustin's just like Justin Rose. You could have seen him make the cut and then make a run. He's that good, and that's what just frustrates the hell out of me with that. But it happens. Like you said, we'll talk about him in a little bit. Last question I have for you, and we can move on, and I know everybody wants us to probably move on by now. But
they can skip forward.
What? Skip what?
They can skip forward.
Oh, yeah. No, I always put the timestamp on the thing.
I'm with you.
I just love talking about good golf.
I'm with you. I agree.
What would you do? Because I think it's really cool. I know some people don't think so much, but the little frat house the boys had there between, you know, JT and Spieth and Zach Johnson, and there's like 8 of them that shared a house in Europe. Literally, they'd eat dinner together. They'd play games. I think it's outstanding because you're in a foreign place. You at least get to hang out with people you know. Gives you a comfort level. We've talked about before, I love the camaraderie this young group has, and, you know, they can be competitive in between the ropes. But then after the round, it's like, we're just buddies playing golf. It's like you do at a club when you go play. You go play an intense match play, and the next thing you know, the guys are having drinks together and having dinner or something.
Right.
I think it's great. I've heard a lot of mixed reviews. I just want to get your take on it.
No, man. I would, you know, if hypothetically speaking, if I was ever a tour pro, which I never will be, but that's what I would want to do. Like, I think that is the way to unwind. You can go in, you can bullshit, you can talk about the round. Because, you know, I go up to this golf tournament this week with one of my friends, and on the way home, all we do is talk about our round and what happened, because we didn't play together, so we didn't know. But it helps our mindset for the next one. We talk about what we were thinking when we were doing this, that, or the other. And golf is such a mental game, man. You've got to have something when it's that intense and you're playing at this high level. You've got to have something to be able to unwind and kind of relax and chill out for a little bit. And obviously it helped Kisner because he's played like shit all year long.
Great point. I forgot all about living in the house there. Yeah.
He was in there with ZJ and they were paired together on Saturday. They drove into the golf course together.
Saturday. I think that's awesome. I think that's awesome. Yeah, and guys, just don't, because like you said, you guys talk about things. These guys can compare like different, you know, missed shots or made shots on a course, like angles into the greens and stuff like that. You just wouldn't talk about, and it might not be flat out going, "Hey, what'd you do there?" It could just be like just common talk. "Hey, did you see the shot?" Or like, and then it just comes out in conversation. I think it's phenomenal.
Well, maybe they don't even talk about golf. I don't know. I mean, maybe they're that big of competitors they don't want to talk about it, which would be fine too. You know what I'm saying? But either way, I mean, it's, you know, I like hanging out with my friends. So why wouldn't they? You know, I mean, they're human beings like the rest of us. So
what's also really cool is a lot of those guys in there are going to be going to Paris together this fall. So I love seeing like, because we've seen how important that is for the Ryder Cup. So I don't know. I thought it was absolutely awesome, and I was really shocked. But it was mainly the old curmudgeons that think golf should be the way it used to be. And it just made me laugh. I thought it was beautiful. It was awesome. Awesome.
I do have one other thing to say about the Open Championship. And for me, like, it can't be – I can't put it ahead of the Masters or the U.S. Open until they get Shot Tracker. Like, effing tilting thing. Like, the European Tour just needs to get Shot Tracker. The RNA needs to get Shot Tracker. And so that way I can tell when my dude's getting ready to miss a three-footer and be pissed off about it instead of just seeing a score magically post a, you know. I mean, it's I love the golf tournament. I think it's awesome, but just get some freaking Shot Tracker.
You mentioned the U.S. Open. What I want to see the U.S. Open do, and I think what'll make the U.S. Open better, because the last few years it's been okay, but it's kind of been an up and down feelings on the situation. I think Pebble will help a lot. And the reason I think Pebble will help a lot is I wish the U.S. Open would adapt like just six or seven courses like the Open does and just rotate them. If you want to throw in a random here to here, that's fine. But have that stable of courses where this is what you're doing. It builds up so much more tradition. You can actually – fix courses the right way instead of like, oh, it's been so long, let's try this type crap. Like, I think that's what would make it so much better.
Yeah, I agree. No, I wouldn't be against that at all. I mean, because then you know from year to year too how to set them up. Like, you rarely ever hear about the Open Championship players bitching about the course, right? Exactly. Because they know how it's going to react based on, I mean, they just know those golf courses obviously have been around a long time, but they've been playing this championship for 147 years. They've been rotating it around. They know how things are going to react based on conditions, and they can set the golf course up to where it's fair. You know, I don't know how they were talking, you know, back in, I guess it was 99, whenever plus 31. But I think there was a lot of weather at that point. And I mean, that's just part of it too. The Open Championship, it's got a lot of weather. And that's just, you know, so.
No, I like it. But it was a great weekend of golf. And it's been nice since we've had a bunch of web.com tours lately. So it was good to, it was really good to see nice competitive golf like that. And we should get some more this weekend. Real quick, before we go to the Canadian Open, what do they have on tap for you at Fanshare this week? Or do you get a week off to relax?
No. I got something over there for them. A lot of the same stuff that I've been doing. I did put a little recap in there for the majors, or especially for the Open, obviously. And one thing that stood out to me is Rory McIlroy has been in the top six in points in four of the last nine majors. Wow. So I'm just going to throw that out there. The rest of it, you can go on there and read.
Yeah, no, Jesse's piece last week was really, really good about kind of consistencies and things to look at for a big millie maker type major lineup. So I'm looking forward to reading that one too. It's been awesome stuff you got you doing over there. So keep that up.
Thank you.
RBC Canadian Open. And this is usually a fun tournament, a low scoring tournament. I'll get to that in the course preview. You'll get to that in the history here in a minute. But this year's got a loaded field, way more loaded than normal, and should be a ton of fun. Why don't you give us some past event history for the RBC Canadian Open?
Yeah, so they've kind of moved this golf tournament around. The last 3 years, it has been at Glen Abbey Golf Course, which is in Oakville, Ontario. So the last 3 years of course history are pretty relevant here, I think. They did have it at Royal Montreal in 2014 and then back at Glen Abbey again in 2013. But either way, Vegas won for the last 2 years. Jonathan Vegas, 12 under in 2016, 21 under last year, and he just came. He played awful coming in. I don't know if you remember or not, but he was not good coming in this tournament last year. But he beat Charlie Hoffman in a in a playoff. Jason Day was your 2015 champion. And Brant Snedeker won it in 2013 when it was played here as well. Tim Clark won it in between 2014, but it doesn't really matter. So Day and Vegas and Snedeker are pretty much the three winners you want to focus on, I guess, if that's what you want to make note of.
Yeah, if you're going the course history route, that is the way to go. You mentioned this Glen Abbey Golf Course located in Oakville, Ontario. Jack Nicklaus designed course, his first solo design course. He designed it in 76. Posted the first Canadian Open in 77. Fifth time here in the last 6 years, like you said, three recently. It'll be the 30th and final time, though, it looks like they'll be hosting the tournament there as they plan on demolishing it and building condos. So that is just awesome.
Wait, what?
Yeah, that's the rumor. It's pretty much, it's like going up to vote, but it's looking like they're going to demolish the course after this year, and then they're going to rotate between four courses in the greater Toronto area coming up.
Wow.
Yeah, Jack's not happy, but he says he understands how infrastructure has to change from time to time. That was the quote. Right? So, yeah, first solo design course by the Golden Bear. You think you might be able to hold that together, but apparently not. So they're going to move that around. And they talked about, I think, next year it's not going to be right after the Open Championship. It might be the week before the U.S. Open. They're going to talk about tinkering the schedule there too. So we'll see how it all plays out. It's a par 72, 7,250-ish yards or so. Really cool, like kind of undulations of a course, not the actual fairways, but you know, the front nine, a lot of it's kind of elevated. Then you go to the valley in the back nine from holes 11 to 15, then it comes back up to the finishing holes 16 through 18. You have lots of water on the course. Seven or eight holes get affected by the water. There's like a little river going through one of the valley holes, but not a ton to completely worry about. You got bent grass greens kind of stuff, the typical stuff they're used to. Nothing too challenging there. Usually kind of elevated. It's Jack design where he's got a lot of bunkers and kind of interesting chipping areas around the greens to make it a little more challenging for you. They say they're narrow, challenging fairways, but they're really easy to hit. Or if you go under the most of the rough, it's not very hard rough. It's typical Jack design. So it's a bomber's paradise. We've seen that in recent weeks by some of the – or recent years by some of the guys you talked about as past winners. If you look at the leaderboards – in the last 3 or 4 years, you get the random guys like a Brant Snedeker out there that can poke and prod, you know, Ian Poulter, top five last year. But for the most part, you're going to have 10 to 15 guys in like the top 15 or 20 that are just bombers. And evidence is Johnny Vegas winning it a couple times and some other guys doing really, really well here. So you have a lot of that to look at here, just bombing away, wedge it in, stick it on the green, go from there. You got 10 par fours. They average about 445 yards. Five par fives average about 530 yards, and they're very, very gettable. Lots of eagles on this course, and I believe I was reading they birdie anywhere from like 60 to 65% of the time on the par five, so you better be scoring there. And then four par threes that are not too bad either. Other than that, you know, you can go if you want really, really deep descriptions, go check that out on the web, but that's not my style. So basically, bombs away and have a decent short game, and you're going to be just fine. Lots of birdies. The average score is about minus 17 or so. Wouldn't be shocked if this one gets into the 20s with this field we have here. Speaking of the field, we have three of the top 10 in the world, eight of the top 30 in the FedEx Cup, and 33 players who played last week at the Open. And in recent years, that hasn't affected them much if they played in the Open. They played just fine here. So not too much to worry about there. Weather-wise, they're talking about some scattered kind of summer storms, maybe Thursday and maybe one late in the weekend. But it's kind of one of those that might just come for a little bit, so they're not going to completely screw things up. If you happen to be out there, though, it's going to definitely soften up the course for you if you get to go back out, which could help you a ton. But that one I have to check a little more as the week goes on. With all that being said, Jesse, what are some of the key stats you're looking at?
Yeah, I mean, DraftKings points, I think, are going to be key this week. Over the last 24 rounds is probably what I'll be looking at. Besides that, tee to green, proximity, and some course history as well. I mean, I do think course history is relevant, and so I'll be looking at course history quite a bit.
Yeah, course history is always one I do enjoy. Current form is going to be good, but this is give me some driving kind of distance accuracy, kind of a blend of some sort there. DraftKings scoring is going to be tremendous. Par 5 scoring is going to be great. Birdie or better percentage kind of all goes into one there, but those are things I'm definitely going to be looking at. It's going to be one of those weeks where you could have a guy who might not be top 10, but he's going to birdie so many holes. The bogeys will be there, but he's going to score like crazy. So keep that in mind when you're making your lineups. Yes, you obviously want guys that are going to finish high, but finishing position isn't going to be as important as just these guys bombing away and scoring this week. So that's what I'm going to be looking at. Real quick, let me give you a couple fan share pieces before we get on to the DraftKings picks. Last year at the Canadian Open, top scorers, Johnny Vegas, he was tagged only 5 times last week, 51st in tags. At Charlie Hoffman, 2nd, he was 6th in tags. Robert Garrigus, 3rd, 20th in tags. These are guys that are in the field this year. Ian Poulter, he was 20th tagged. Gary Woodland, 8th. Tony Finau was 3rd tagged. DJ was number 1. James Hahn, 26th. JB Holmes, 12th. Keegan Bradley, 24th tag. So a lot of guys, you know, 2, 4, half the guys were 20th or worse in the tag. So kind of a mixed match of options here. As you can tell, Vegas, Hoffman, Garrigus, Woodland, Finau, DJ, JB, a lot of bombing going on in that repertoire right there. If you talk current form coming into this tournament, people in this field, average DraftKings points in the last 3 events, Joel Dahmen leads the way, almost 98 DraftKings points per week in his last 3 events. Joaquin Niemann, 2nd, about 92. HV3 at about 90. Bo Hostler, who just pulled out, I believe, so that has to get updated. Tommy Fleetwood is 5th. My boy, Stewie Sink, 6th best in his last 3 events. He's only $7,100 this week. Brooks Koepka, 7th. Chris Kirk, 8th. Austin Cook pulled out as well. Then Tyler Duncan is 10th, and he's a guy to definitely look at. And the one thing I'll mention just straight out the gate, most of those guys are cheap this week, if you believe in that kind of stuff. And when you look at the last 6 events, it doesn't change at all. So, or no, there you go. You get a couple of changes. DJ comes onto the list. JB Holmes, Poulter, and Finau migrate onto the list, but a lot of the same guys we looked at a second ago. All right. With that being said, Jesse, let's get into the DraftKings picks. We got as much info as we can, as they literally came out about half hour before we started recording. We have 3 guys at 10K or above. You got DJ at 11.7, Brooks Koepka at 10.8, Tommy Fleetwood at 10.5. All of them are very capable of winning a tournament like this. If you have to pick just one, Jesse, you can give me an argument for all 3. Give me an argument for all 3. That's fine. If you have to pick just one, who are you going with?
First of all, why are there only 3 golfers above?
I was shocked by that because they want Tony Finau to be 70% owned.
You know, I mean, like you said, it's 7:50 on Monday, and it came out about an hour ago. So, it was kind of a first look, but I mean, we've obviously got models run, all that kind of thing. So we are making some educated guesses here, picks, whatever you want to call them. But 3 above 10K, it's wild. So, I mean, if I'm going to rank them out, I mean, it's hard to say not DJ. He tends, like, you know, he missed the cut last week. He's his last 3 events, his last 3 times he's played this golf tournament. So he's an RBC, he's sponsored by RBC. So he has to play. He doesn't have to, but he plays in these events because RBC is his sponsor. So last 3 times he's played this event, 8th, 2nd, 2nd. So obviously good tournament history, good course history with the 8th and the 2nd the last 2 years. And I mean, dude is just, if you look at like his last, look at his year, it's pretty impressive. I mean, you wouldn't say really that DJ's having a great year, but he has 2 wins, bunch of other top 10s. So I'm gonna go DJ up here. If I'm going up here, and I don't really, I doubt people will avoid him because of the miscut last week. But it'll be interesting to see his ownership. He is the top price guy, which tends to lower ownership quite a bit. He will probably be number 1 on fan share, but I doubt he will be as high as everybody will project him to be.
Yeah, all 3 of these guys are definitely up for grabs. I'm going to go DJ as well. If you want me to go Narrative Street, I can go Narrative Street. I remember reading last year, he wants to win this for his father-in-law, who is a Canadian. He takes a lot of pride in this one. He wants this one bad to make Papa happy. So that's another, if you want to go Narrative Street angle. But the other Narrative Street that scares me more is a pissed off Dustin Johnson. Right. You know he's embarrassed for not making the cut and contending in a major that many thought he had a chance to do some damage at. I like him a ton. All 3 of these guys are great picks. If you want to go there, definitely check FanShare. You can get some definite leverage on different ownership areas here. this is a weekend you can go Stars and Scrubs pretty easily, in my opinion. But DJ would be my one if you had to. The rest of them, great plays. Like Fleetwood would not shock you if he just stormed through this tournament. But DJ would be my guy too.
Yeah, my only issue with the other two is their proximity stats are not very good over the last 24 or so. I mean, DJ just ranks so high in everything. He's pretty much the best in the field at just about everything he does. So that's why he's number one player in the world. So that's why I would go DJ. Like you said, you can make a case for all three of them, but there's only three golfers above 10K.
Yeah, there's a couple we're about to mention of the nines I swore would have been at least 10-5 or 10-4 or something. I'm shocked.
The second one
I predicted 10-4, and I'm shocked. Yeah. So let's talk about it, 9Ks. You got Sergio Garcia at 90. And look, we have like seven guys in the 9Ks. We always have four. Sergio Garcia at 99. Tony Finau, 98. Bubba Watson, 96. Cooch, 95. Neiman, 94. Jimmy Walker, 93. Not Johnny Walker. Jimmy Walker. Gary Woodland, 92. Ian Poulter, 91. And Kisner, $9,000. Quite the arsenal here, Jesse. Who are you looking at?
Yeah, I mean, I've got a bunch of these guys checked off right now, and I'll have to narrow this down at some point. But, I mean, Bubba is very interesting at 96. I think that's a decent price on him. He has made the cut the last 2 years. He was 42nd last year, second in 2015. So, I mean, not great necessarily course history, but he's coming off the miscut at the British Open. Last time he miscut at a major, he won the next week, the Travelers Championship. Not going to say that's going to happen again, but it's not a bad price for Bubba there. He ranks out pretty well as far as DraftKings points. Obviously, makes a ton of birdies, and proximity has been good too over the last 24. Other than him, I personally, I'll probably go back to Poulter just because I hope people lay off of him. He was third here last year, and that's when he was not really playing the greatest golf. I mean, he was playing okay, but he's definitely a much better golfer at this point than he was last year at the same time. So I do like going back to Poulter. Woodland's interesting. He has really good course history. That price though kind of shocks me just due to his year. I figured he'd be in the eight. So 92 is a little bit weird. He hasn't had a good finish since February. So, I mean, he's had a 23rd at the Memorial. Other than that, Neiman's interesting. Kuchar, man, we didn't talk about him, but he top 10 last weekend. At a major. And obviously Finau. I mean, Finau will probably be chalky. So I might avoid Finau completely this week. So I might be just burning all my money. I don't know.
Yeah, Finau I absolutely love. Like, I think he easily should have been 10K. I am going to watch ownership, though. I'm not going to play like a chalky Tony Finau. It's just not going to happen. Not in this range with other options, but he's my top option here by far. You talk about a bomb and wedge type course. Tony Finau is that spitting image I think about most of the time. So I love the price tag you're getting here, and I'm afraid everyone's going to love this price tag. But that's my top option there. But then Bubba at 96 I think is a great pivot. Like you said, he's made two straight cuts here. It's a new Bubba. We talk about it all the time, but there's a lot to be said about that. And of course, if he has to avoid bunkers in the fairway, or he has to avoid a creek or move things around, stuff that fits his eye, this is definitely somewhere Bubba can make things work and then let his short game do his trick. So Bubba at 96, I think it's very interesting. Cooch is going to go way overlooked at $9,500. People are going to see his price tag and say, not a chance. This is an $8,000 golfer every week. We're not paying $95. Well, he's played, like you said, top 10 again last week. He played well here last year. It's Kuchar. This is what Kuchar does, guys. And he already had that hiccup earlier in the year. So Kuchar 95, I think, will be super low owned in this range because Neiman's 94. Everyone's going to want to play Joaquin Neiman. So Kuchar at 95 could be an interesting pivot. And then the other guy I like here, and I'm with you 100%, Jimmy Zamora, Ian Poulter at 91. He finished top five here last year. And this course fits his golf game if he hasn't completely gone off the rails after last week, which I don't think he has. That was just weird because he's been playing so well the last couple months, like we've talked about many times. So a guy like Ian Poulter at $9,100 is someone I definitely like as a rebound, another low owned. So it's a deep range at 9K, but you can definitely have some good pivots here, which I do like quite a bit to play with.
Yeah, going back to your Cooch deal there, he hasn't broken 20% anytime he's been over $9,000 this year. He's been over $9,000 a few times, but he's been mostly low to mid-teens. So I do like that call that you just made there. I'm a Cooch fan this week as well. I mean, at least I hope he's figured it out because he was pissed. You know, when you ride Kuchar for so long and then he sucks and then you just don't have him and then he's good, that sucks.
Yeah, we almost need to stop being – I'm not saying we're being lazy, but we almost need to just start taking better notes of previous guys. Like, okay, Finau's top 10 all over the place at majors. Kuchar comes to Europe and just plays great golf in the Open. Like, it's not even be cute about it. It's just what he does. Just like we need to like put it on like sometimes just ignore the models what we need to do.
But. I mean, him and Spieth both. I mean, they were 1 and 2 last year and they both top 10 again this year. That's pretty impressive.
Very impressive. Very, very impressive. Let's get into the 8K range, which is short this week. JB Holmes, Steve Stricker, Charlie Hoffman, Chesson Hadley, Brent Seneca, Adam Hadwin, a fellow Canuck, Wesley Bryan, David Lingmerth, Keegan Bradley, and Billy Horschel. Interesting group here in the 8Ks. A couple I'm going to look at is Steve Stricker, $8,800. If we're just going to go with accuracy and bring it in, this is your guy. I'm concerned he can't keep up with the pace, but I'm looking at him because at that price point, I don't think he's going to own it all. Every time we don't think he's going to keep up at courses like this and tournaments like this, he does it. So I have to at least acknowledge him and dig into him some more. And I think he's a pivot off the guy at $8,700 who I love is Charlie Hoffman. He said he lost in a playoff last year to Vegas. He plays well at this course. He can bomb at this course. Another good open for him, something he likes to do well. $8,700 for Hoffman, I think, is too cheap in this field. And it's a good field, but I think he's still too cheap. He should be in the 9,000s, in my opinion. So I like those two up top for sure. You can give Hadwin a look. He looked great at the Open, and he's been much better of late. So maybe he's starting to find that stroke again and going home. Could be big at $8,400. Lingmer's up to $8,200. No one's going to pay that price for him, but he's been outstanding. I was riding him before the Open. And then even this last week at the Barbasol, he played really, really well if my DraftKings page would open. But there we go. He finished T15, and you know, after a T72 of the John Deere, but then a T11, T48, T19. He's been very, very good of late. Don't mind him. And then lastly, in this range, I can't ignore him, and everyone hates him, but $8,100 for Keegan Bradley. it's too cheap. I'm sorry. It's too cheap. He struggled at the Open. That's what it is. But T13, T47 coming into that. He missed the cut at the U.S. Open, then T23, T7, playing really good golf, making cuts. Fields like this, he actually rises closer to the top, and $8,100, I think, is a great play. So give me some Stricker, Hoffman, Bradley for sure. I'm looking for Lingmerth and Hadwin. Who do you like in the 8K range?
Yeah, I like Hoffman quite a bit. I'll probably have him in quite a few lineups. He's got really good course history here. Another guy who has really good course history is Brant Snedeker. Not the best recent form, obviously, so I think that could depress the ownership a little bit. But obviously, past winner here when it was at Glen Abbey in 2013, fifth in 2016, didn't play here last year. Cut off miscut at the Open Championship. Did not play well, but he was third at the Greenbrier, which is probably more similar to this tournament than the Open ever will be.
Exactly.
So, you know, I think he's got a couple of things going for him, you know, coming off the miscut, and he just has really good course history. So those would be the two for me in this range. I mean, some of these names are weird. This pricing is just getting stranger and stranger the further we get into it, but I do like Hoffman quite a bit.
Yeah, I think Hoffman's a very, very good play. I'm scared about how chalky he might be. Him and Finau.
Yeah.
Two of the guys I'm really worried about. But, hey, we didn't even talk about it. The Millie Maker had 5 dupe lineups. Chalk is king yet again. Oh, and if Tiger hits that putt on 18, one guy wins it by himself. So,
yeah, guilt off of that shit? The other thing about the Millie, too, was it was duped 5 times. Yeah. And if one person takes Tiger of those five, if one person takes Tiger over Fleetwood, they win $1 million.
Yep. That's
and they would have left 500 on the table. So that lineup was duped 5 times. It used the full $50,000 in salary.
And it's funny because everyone's saying, see, you don't have to be different and leave money on the table. But Jesse just told you if you left $500 on the table, you win $1 million.
Yeah.
By yourself. I mean,
if you pivot off of Fleetwood onto Woods, I mean, obviously it's super easy to sit back and.
Oh, yeah.
Captain Hansel. Right. Or you could have pivoted off of Finau onto Kisner or ZJ. Or no, not ZJ. Kisner or Chapel. And been different and left just a little bit of money on the table. Of course, you know, those two were combined 0.5% owned. But anyway, back to this week.
No, it was pretty crazy to see that, though. We didn't mention it, so I had to mention it at least once.
Yeah, we should have talked about that anyway.
Let's go 7,500 and above. You got Ollie, Patrick Rogers, Love Mark, Benyon, Kevin Tway, Martin Keimer, Siwoo Kim, Chris Kirk, Daniel Lee, Andrew Putnam, Blom, Shane Lowry, Ryan Armour, Kelly Kraft, and Johnny Vegas. Who you liking at 7,500 and above?
Well, so for me, it's going to be more at 76 and 75. So I think Vegas is interesting because, like I said, last year he came into this tournament playing awful. He was not good because I remember, so he'd missed 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 cuts in a row coming into this tournament last year, and he won. This year, he's missed 2 in a row. Did you hear the story about him too? Like, getting to England at like 9:30 and he teed off at 10:30. Yeah.
And they didn't have his clubs, so they had to have custom made ones there when he showed up. He's never hit those clubs.
And he still only shot 5-8 over. I mean,
it was impressive.
New clubs, never seen the golf course. So anyways, I do think he's interesting. I mean, last year he was next to not owned. He was 3% owned last year, and he outscored everybody by like 20 or 30 points. But either way, I think Vegas is interesting. And the other one would be Kirk. He has put on a pretty good showing here recently as far as his form goes. He played at the Barbasol this past week, he finished 40th. So not a great finish, but I mean, he shot all rounds under par, hit a bunch of greens. And I was watching somebody tweet about him throwing darts. So his proximity numbers have been pretty good here recently. Maybe that's inflated by that kind of easier golf course. I don't know, but he's been scoring DraftKings points pretty well too. So I do like Kirk. So Vegas and Kirk for the most part for me in this range. Who you got?
I like a couple. If you want to get really GPP, it's a guy we get tilted on a lot, but he's actually made 15 of 20 cuts this year. And his last few events, T26, 74, T19, T37, T17. It's a 5 straight cuts. I'm talking Jamie Lovemark at 700 bucks. He's a tilting putter, but if you want to talk bombers and scoring in a GPP, I can definitely look at Jamie Lovemark some more. A guy that's coming in a much better form of late, Kevin Tway at 77 is another one, but I do like Chris Kirk a lot. I'm with you there at 7,600 bucks. He's one I definitely had circled in that range. And then one other one you can look at, he's been everyone's darling of late. Some worries to be a little chalky down here. He's coming off a miscut at the Open, but a T21 and a second before that at the Greenbrier and the Quicken Loans is Ryan Armour at 7,500. Was playing really, really good golf before the Open miscut, which you kind of have to take with a grain of salt. So those would be the ones I'm looking at there. Kirk is my favorite out of that group. I'm with you on that one for sure. But the ones I like more are below 75. So tell me, who do you like 7,400 and below?
Joel Dahlman, obviously top of the list. He's number 2 on this model I made because he's just scoring a ton of DraftKings points. I think you mentioned he was first over the last 3 tournaments or something. Is that
he's,
right?
It's like second or third, I think. But yeah, he's right. He's near the top. He's doing very well.
He had a miscut here. He had a miscut here last year, but I'm not worried about that at all whatsoever. So, big fan of his this week again. Will he be chalky? I don't know. Like, he was scheduled to be super chalk at the the Greenbrier? Is that the John Deere, and he didn't turn into it, so I don't know. I think Reavy's interesting at 73. He's got pretty good proximity stats. That's what I was going to say. He's played this course well. Troy Merritt coming off the win. I don't know that I'll play him at all, but he played well, and he putted very, very well this past week. J.J. Spahn scoring a ton of DraftKings points. I think Harold Varner is underpriced at 7,100 due to his recent form. He's coming off – what did he – last couple weeks, because I avoided him at the John Deere as well, and he finished 6th because I thought he was going to be chalky, and he was 11% owned. So him and Dahlman are kind of similar to me as far as I don't know where their ownership is going to lie, but he's 5th and 6th in his last 2 tournaments. And then Burgoon, most definitely playable. Sam Ryder is very playable. Hoagie's all right. Sabatini. And Jim Furyk's interesting because he's got really good course history here, and I don't know if that's just because some old rounds or something are creeping in. Obviously he's not that great recently, but 7,100. I mean, I'll leave Stewart Cink up to you.
I agree with you on Dahlman at 74. Another guy at 74 I like a lot, Keith Mitchell. perfect kind of setup for him, bomb and gouge type course, T7 at the John Deere, which I liked him a lot there. I think he could do well here on this one. After that, Nick Watney always gets my attention when he's down here, but I think I don't need to go there this week, but $7,300. He's intriguing. Tyler Duncan at 72. I agree with Sam Ryder. I think that's a crazy low on play. I've already heard his name quite a bit, so be careful there. HV3, he's too cheap for his recent form. Agree completely there. I like Ryder and HV3. Could be chalk, but very, very nice plays. If you want a $7,100 pivot, it's a guy I talked about on the pod a couple weeks ago, and he's been playing really well at these kind of courses where he can just bombs away. He did miss the cut at the John Deere, but T21 at the Barbasol, T47 at the Greenbrier, T13 at the Quicken Loans. We're talking Steven Yeager, a guy we talked about before. So he's very interesting at the $7,100 price tag as a potential pivot off some chalkier plays. And then, you know, Stewie Cink at 71 is just outstanding. If you play Cink and Kuchar together, you get the two bald white guy tandem. It's just going to be dangerous on your roster. So Cink at 71, I think, is a great play on this course. And the last guy I'll mention, because I think he's crazy underpriced for his skill level. We've seen him compete on and off all year. And, yeah, he missed the cut of the John Deere, but prior to that, a T30 at the Greenbrier, T32 at the Quicken Loans, T38 at the Travelers, T37 at the FedEx, St. Jude. I'm talking Brandon Harkins at $7,000. I think he can be a nice bottom of the pat type guy here. So this is kind of why I can see a Stars and Scrubsy approach. And for those that listen regularly, it's not my style. But on this tournament, you can definitely load up and take some chances down below. Because as I mentioned earlier with the FanShare deal, a lot of those guys that finished top 10 in DraftKings scoring that are in the field this year were not that popular. So you can definitely pick and prod down below, and they were low priced as well. So you can pick and prod through this region.
One other guy I would keep my eye on, I don't know that I'll play him at all, is Cameron Champ. He hits it about 3 miles. Normally you would say, you know, somebody hits it a mile, he hits it about 3 miles. So I think he's interesting. He recently won, I believe, on the web.com. Yeah.
Yep.
So 7,000.
It's not a bad call. Let's go into the 6Ks where there's a lot of options down here as well. Who are some guys you're targeting down here?
So in the 6Ks, there's definitely a few that I do believe are playable. Get my list pulled back up here. Sorry. So one, and this is just really weird and just a kind of a hunch more than anything else, is Hudson Swafford. He's not played very well recently, but he has some pretty good course history if you dig into some of his stats on the actual golf course. He's played it decently well. Now, can he bring any semblance of a putter? That is always the question with Mr. Swafford. But the last 2 years, 32nd and 14th, he's made the cut basically the last 3 years of this golf course. So he's interesting. I think he's a good GPP play. If you're playing large field GPP and you've got $105 teams or something, you know, I would put him on, you know, 5 or 6. I think he's worth a shot. A couple more. Blaine Barber, he played well last week at the Barbasol. And Tyrone Van Eiswagen, he's got good course history stats as well. Not very good recent form. So, you know, those would be the three guys for me. Who you got?
A couple guys here. I got to always at least look at Johnny Huh as a guy that he's very hit and miss. Like we saw
him
on here, but not always there. But $6,900 gives you that upside. Nick Taylor at $6,900, another bomber that's played really, really well of late. So he's an option down here. I like your Van Aswagon pick. A couple others, if you want to go down here, everyone's going to go to Garrigus again at 69. I'll go elsewhere, but he's there. Mackenzie Hughes at 68 is an interesting one, coming in on really good form. Ben Silverman had a good week in free at the Barbasol. And then one guy I will mention, had him a couple weeks ago, was Scott Brown at $6,700, coming in really good form. He's made 2, 4, 5 straight cuts, a couple a T21 and T12 in his last two events. And the last guy I'll mention, and he will be chalkier than chalk down here, he's very interesting, is Dylan Meyer. He made the field at $6,700. He's been playing lights out lately. T43 at the John Deere, T17 at the Quicken Loans. Got cut at the Travelers, T20 at the U.S. Open, T74 at Valspar. So he was chalky at the Travelers after the U.S. Open performance. He shit the bed. Back-to-back made cuts at $6,700. He could be a very good choice here at this tournament. But the 6K, a lot of different options, a lot of good pivot options that you can tinker with down here. With that being said, who are your favorite punts? I guess you already mentioned three. Did you have a favorite out of the three?
Swafford. Don't ask me why. It's just – and don't get mad at me when he misses a 3-footer, but Swofford.
Yeah, for now I'm gonna have to say Dylan Meyer. If we stay at 6,900 below, is my favorite, but I don't want a $6,700 guy that's like 15% owned either. So let's keep an eye on that.
Yeah.
Who is your bust of the week?
Lord, I mean, I think the easy pick's probably Sergio at 9,900. It's gonna take quite a bit to pay off that price, so I would go the easy route, I guess, and say Serge.
Yeah, I like Serge a lot as the bust of the week. If I don't go Serge, though, I'm going to go Joaquin Niemann just because everyone's going to be on that guy. And at this price tag now, he's going to have to start really finishing strong. So that's where I go. Who's your core for now?
For now, I mean, it's DJ, Dahlman, and Varner. As far as like in the mid range, I would lean Cooch, like you were just talking about, in Bubba.
Yeah, for now, obviously it could change, but I really like Finau, Hoffman, and Keith Mitchell as like my threesome to build around. I think that's where I want to be going. At the same time, if Finau and Hoffman are chalky, I can differentiate elsewhere. But those are the three I really like right now in that field. Who do you have winning the event? This is a crap. This is one of the tougher weeks. Man. Unless you like, obviously go DJ. This is one of the tougher weeks to pick a winner to me.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is actually a pretty good field. There's a lot of big names here, so this is a tough one to predict. But I would go Bubba Watson for kind of the guys up top. And if you want like a mid range guy, I think it might be a Dahlman week.
I went Charlie Hoffman. And if it's not Charlie down below, I'm going Keith Mitchell.
I like it.
Those are the guys I got winning this bad boy. Well, we did it. A little first look. Not a lot of time, but we got it in. Any final thoughts as people get ready for the RBC Canadian Open? Actually, a really fun weekend.
Yeah, it should be a good golf tournament. A lot of birdies this week. So a little bit of a change from the Open. But either way, only a couple more weeks to the PGA Championship and the final major, then the FedEx Cup, and we're winding down, believe it or not, PGA Tour season.
Yep, PGA Tour season is almost over. Tiger qualified for the Bridgestone, buried that lead as well, so he'll be in the field there trying to win his ninth title, so that'll be pretty impressive. But all in all, should be a ton of fun. Check out Jesse on Twitter at DFS Golf Gods and his work over at Fanshare. I am at BD Intrick. We are at The Sports Degens, thesportsdegens.com, so go check us out there. And join us in the Slack chat throughout the week, and especially Wednesday night, we can answer more questions as we get more info on the stuff that just came out and maybe some weather and whatnot. So go check it all out. We will catch you guys next week. This was the Always Pressing PGA DFS podcast previewing the RBC Canadian Open. Oh,